This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Before we start this episode, just a quick note, because it happened after Andrew Marchand and I taped our podcast. Chris Mortensen, the defining insider of his generation, the longtime NFL reporter for ESPN, passed away this past Sunday at age 72. He had been battling cancer, throat cancer, for a long, long time. And it's just worth noting that, you know, to me, his work, certainly Will McDonough you put in there as well, but they helped develop an entire cottage industry that is ubiquitous today, which is the sports television insider. And just given how prominent ESPN was when Mortensen worked there in the 90s and the 2000s, so many people who now are in these positions, including at ESPN, owe him a big debt of gratitude, because he forged this. Obviously, Peter King, my colleague at Sports Illustrated for many years, sort of also on that mantle. But you talk to people at ESPN, and you know, there's some would say Chris Mortensen is one of the five most important hires, certainly talent hires at that place. And then I was also just struck by, after he had passed, just so many people in the NFL community who said some very, very nice things about him, just as a human being. So Chris Mortensen passes away at age 72, and just a remarkable career, and he will certainly be missed. All right, there's no really easy segue to make, but our guest on this episode has written a really, really fascinating book. Julie Kliegman, the former copy chief for Sports Illustrated, has written Mind Game, an inside look at the mental health playbook of elite athletes. And if you are into the nexus of mental health and athletics, and I find that topic just really, really fascinating, I highly recommend this book. Julie spoke with people like Brianna Scurry, Shamiqua Holdsclaw. There are chapters in there about Michael Phelps. One of the great things today is that this generation of athlete is unafraid to discuss mental health issues and performance issues publicly. And I think that's just beyond helpful for young people, particularly young athletes, you know, many of whom might never see the pros or even high-level college football, because, you know, all of us deal with this stuff, and athletes have a lot of weight when it comes to just their public prominence. So it's a really, really fascinating book just that examines this nexus. And you know, I think this topic will only grow as mental health discussions sort of become more public and all the stigmas go away. So Julie Kliegman coming up on the Sports Media Podcast. Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. One guest on this episode, but an excellent one, particularly if you are interested, as I am, in the nexus of athletics and mental health. Julie Kliegman, who was until very recently the copy chief for Sports Illustrated, and also was a copy editor at The Ringer, weekend editor, and breaking news contributor at The Week, and a news fellow at the BuzzFeed, has a new book out. The title is Mind Game, an inside look at the mental health playbook of elite athletes. If you've read Sports Illustrated over the years, you probably would recognize Julie's byline. She has really been at the forefront of writing about this nexus. And to me, just on a personal note, particularly as the son of a therapist, this is a topic that I find really, really fascinating, and I think will continue to grow in terms of interest as we head forward. And with that, I bring in Julie Kliegman. Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, so here let's start here. How much on this subject is sort of out in the marketplace right now, both books, media, et cetera? You can take that broadly. And did that influence you in your decision to actually do something long form, right? Not just do a magazine piece, but, you know, put this in book form?
I think what we see in the landscape is a lot of one-off pieces on a specific athlete. And I've certainly done my share of those as well. And they're really valuable, right? But I think where the coverage was lacking was in synthesizing all the information that we have and writing something longer form about it.
The, you know, you have a number of pieces that you have done on this, and you did draw on that in the book, but it's sort of one thing to, you know, do a magazine style piece, and then another thing to sort of figure out, okay, how can I carry this thing over hundreds of pages? So if you could, because obviously this podcast very much deals with process, take my listeners through the process of how you want to approach this in book form as opposed to how you might do it in magazine form.
Yeah, it was really hard for me to sort of break out of the magazine mindset and settle on a structure that I felt was working for the book. I'm actually like, I feel like as a journalist, I don't think structure is one of my strongest points. I kind of like, I'll like have all the right words and the right sentences and even the right paragraphs, but then it's like you could sort of like shuffle them around and like they'll probably turn out better. So
yeah. I don't think you're alone in that, by the way. I think that's okay. I think a lot of journalists like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we have editors. but yeah, so with Mind Game, I wanted to make sure first that we were kind of laying out a vocabulary for mental health in sports. And so that's why the first chapter is sort of about stereotypes that athletes face when they talk about their mental health and specifically their mental performance issues and mental illness, if they have that. So I wanted to start there. And then from there, I thought it was really important to like go back through history and talk about what we have seen in the history of sports psychology, in the history of athletes disclosing their mental illness. And, you know, there's both more and less history than you might expect in both of those areas. It's pretty interesting. There isn't one like straight through line from a century ago, say, to today, but I wanted to chronicle what's there. I felt it was really important to lay out for readers what existed before Simone Biles, before Naomi Osaka, before Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan. And then I sort of get into, you know, particular issues that athletes struggle with. And then there's a chapter on what to do without sports and how athletes handle that.
So one of the things that is interesting to me that I'm sure you examined is we're now in an era, thankfully, where there's a whole generation of athletes that are unafraid about being public when it comes to mental health. You mentioned DeMar DeRozan, obviously Simone Biles, Michael Phelps. There's a ton of them. Then you obviously have a lot of these examples in your book. When you were doing your research, like we go back to the 40s, the 50s or 60s in newspapers or magazines or whatever, like did anyone like even broach this topic? And like, how was it, if it was even covered at all, like how was it covered? What did you discover?
Yeah, there's actually another great book about this that I want to recommend. It's by a communication studies professor by the name of Ronald Bishop. And it's called A Little Less Conversation, The Thematic Evolution of Sports Journalism's Narrative of Mental Illness. And so what he wrote about and what I found in my research as well was that there were sporadically these anecdotes of athletes who were going through some things that were not described very charitably in newspapers at the time. You know, they might say somebody's off his rocker or, you know, like different euphemistic phrases like that for, hey, this guy's insane or we don't know what to do with this guy. And there were some athletes throughout history who unfortunately have died by suicide. So that comes up as well, but they're really kind of seen as like all one-offs, and like no one's really interrogating whether there might be a greater issue at play there.
For you, and you mentioned these athletes in the book, Shamiqua Holtzclaw, Pete Harnish, Bill Pulsifer, Michael Phelps, was, and obviously if you sort of bring it to like in the last couple of years, you know, Simone Biles, I'd put her on there, DeMar DeRozan. Do you find there's one athlete that turned out to be the sort of the breakthrough, that this athlete being public with mental health struggles sort of opened the door for, now we see a lot of athletes, particularly in their 20s, being unafraid to talk about this stuff, to the point where, like, I think even like a mental health counselor, like for an athlete, you wouldn't even blink at this point if they had a performance, you know what I mean, a mental health performance coach or anything like that, where I'm sure in the 70s or something like that, if that was written or people said that, people would be like, what, you know, what is this? This is crazy. Yeah. So I don't know. Do you point to any particular athlete who, this is kind of not the best way to say it, but like who kind of mainstreamed being public with this?
Yeah, I think, I mean, not that there weren't prominent people before him, because I, as you just laid out, I wrote about some of them in the book, but I think to the extent you can pinpoint a shift of sorts to one person, I think for me, it'd have to be Michael Phelps. He was so famous, is still so famous, and was so successful. He's one of the greatest athletes of his generation, and certainly, obviously, among the most decorated. And he was just so consistent when he started speaking up quite a while ago now about his suicidal thoughts, like the difficulty of the post-Olympics depression period that he's been through a number of times.
What did you find, if in your exploration, about an athlete's sort of quest for perfection and their ability to try to navigate sort of the inevitability of not finding perfection and then negative thoughts floating through their head because of that? Because it's such a performance-based business.
Yeah, I found and had a lot of experts tell me that there's a big risk in like hooking your identity to your athletic self, to, you know, and only seeing yourself as an athlete, because then if you don't perform your best one day as an athlete, you're like, well, am I a worthwhile person? Like, it's really easy to make that leap if you don't know who you are outside of sports, or you're such a perfectionist that sports is everything to you.
I don't know if in your research, actually, I do know this because reading the book, that you did sort of find some differences. How would you say that women athletes, either college athletes or pro athletes, talk about this or approach this differently than male pro athletes or male college athletes?
Yeah, I think because of the stereotypes against female athletes that, you know, that are rooted in sexism, like, oh, they're so emotional or they're not tough. I think a weird side effect of that is that they've had an easier time coming forward and talking about their emotions than their male counterparts might have, just because of the fact that men are supposed to be so strong, so brave, like, so, you know, on their game all the time. And I think them showing vulnerability has been a little more stigmatized.
What can you tell my listeners about what is happening in college athletics now in terms of what resources are available for athletes? Are the resources different between like the mega programs, like, you know, at a Michigan or Ohio State versus like Division III? I realize it's a broad question. You'd probably do an entire book on college athletics and this topic, but what does your research tell us of the state of this in 2024?
Yeah. So college athletics have come a long way in terms of offering more mental health professionals as resources. But yeah, I think you're right to ask about the distinction between, you know, the top Power Five programs and like an average, say, Division III program, because there might be several sports psychologists on staff at, you know, your Ohio States, your Michigans, your Alabamas, schools like that. And at Division III, you're kind of lucky if you have won. And this is all new, even to college athletics in the last, like, I would say 20, 25 years. So it's really happened rather quickly, and it's happened as kind of like following in the footsteps of professional teams that have started employing these people.
Do you find that the athletes are given the agency to go out and to use these coaches? Like, is there, have we reached a point, at least based on your research and based on the book, have we reached a point where there's no stigma if I'm a star basketball player at some Power Five school to like request a counselor or to request a mental health coach?
Yeah, I don't think we've quite reached that point, at least in talking to athletes. They have the resources available. They're oftentimes encouraged to use the resources, but there's still that worry in the back of their heads a lot of times that, oh, will I be benched if it comes out that I'm seeing the sports psychologist, or will I see my minutes drastically go down, or will I not be captain anymore? Things like that.
My favorite part of this book is you have this anecdote about Brianna Scurry, who is the goalkeeper for the United States women's national soccer team. I screen grabbed this here. It's not like you guys can see this because you're obviously listening to this, but let me sort of read you something. So she, you know, as Julie discovered, was a prominent athlete who made use of a sports psychologist in the 1990s, probably was very – Maybe she's not like the quote unquote pioneer, but that's pretty pioneering thinking back then. And so she was trying to basically figure out how to get an edge to retain her starting spot. There are obviously other goaltenders at the time. And so this is her sort of from the book, open quote. My father was always someone that said, Bree, you can always learn something new. And so when my mental skills coach, Colleen Hacker, came along, some people thought she had her voodoo and woo-woo psychology. It was all new back then. It wasn't like the industry is now. She said this in 2022, Brianna Scurry, looking back. She's talking about Colleen Hacker. She's a pioneer in what she's doing. And this is like the fascinating part to me. In net, Scurry said she would get frustrated when she was scored on. It's only natural in a position where one mistake can do enough damage to knock a team out of a World Cup. Hacker helped her compartmentalize. She said, Bree, I want you to try this. When you give up a goal, you have between the time when the goal is scored and the kickoff to dwell on it and to be upset about it. And then what I want you to do is once the whistle blows, you put it in the package and you put it on the shelf. It'll be there. We have the game footage. We could look at it later. And then Brianna Stewart, another great athlete, Brianna Scurry said that one thing revolutionized my goalkeeping, which is awesome. And that, like, that's my favorite anecdote in your book, Julie. And what it sort of shows you is like the power of a mental performance coach sort of saying, look at this in an entirely different way, and mm-hmm. you can then sort of own it. And the fact that she said, which is just like kind of genius to me, like, you got this 40-second window where you can really be pissed off and you can hate what happened, and then you got to basically say, we'll look at it later and go back. I love that. And I wonder when you sort of discovered that anecdote, just like what your thought was, because that to me was like, I think you don't even need to be a professional athlete to use that kind of advice, which I thought was awesome.
No, that's so true. It's applicable to so many situations. I love talking to her because I think what I realized is the U.S. women's national team, like, obviously their success over the years has been so calculated and so strategic. It was never a fluke that those teams were good. And I think that's very much tied to the legacy of Colleen Hacker and her role on that team, and the team not being afraid to use a resource like that when a lot of other professional athletes might have scoffed.
It's a broad question because in many ways you can read your book and probably get like 40 of these things, but at least some top line stuff. Like, what do you think non-athletes can learn from elite athletes when it comes to how they approach mental health?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And it's definitely something that while writing the book, I wanted to make sure would come through without it sort of being like, here's this book you can take to the gym with you. I didn't want to do it on that level, but I just wanted to do it on the level of like, what can people gather from Michael Phelps, from Bran Escuri, from all these people and, you know, take to their own lives? And I think the number one thing that I hear athletes talk about is routine and just making sure that, you know, you can take this however literally you want to, but, you know, some people, you know, they need to wake up at the same time every day, walk their dog at the same time every day, eat breakfast at the same time every day. And I don't think everyone has to be that strict about it, but just going into a day, like knowing what you want to do, knowing what your intentions are and, kind of executing from there. And I'm not really like into like productivity hacks or things like that, but I think this one's basic enough that there is a lot of truth to it. And I think the other thing I would say is that athletes know when they have like weak points that they need to shore up, whether that's, I don't know, maybe keeping their emotions in control when they're in goal or, something like their negative self-talk when they're pitching. Maybe they, aren't focusing enough on getting the ball across the plate, something like that. I think they know when they need to shore those things up, and they know that they have an army of professionals at their disposal. Now we as non-athletes don't have that same army in most situations, but I think just like the idea that you can and should ask for help is really valuable.
Did you, in the course of this book, did you come away with any kind of conclusion in terms of, how much of success in athletics is like mental versus like physical, or you know what I'm saying? Or how much of a, like, I know it's a little cliche, but like, you know, Kobe Bryant, like, was someone famous for like having this like incredible mental strength. And he, like, he was someone who like, he wanted to be the earliest person at the gym every day. He would stay famously if he had a bad game and shoot like 100 shots. You know, probably more than 100, 1,000 shots afterwards. So it's at least his teammates would say like he was very mentally strong, and obviously he's one of the great players of all time. I don't even know how to ask this, but have you gotten in your mind like an opinion of your own percentage of like how much success comes down to like sort of someone's mental health and where they are in that versus the physical part or the skills part?
That's a great question, and it's a really tough one. I think I'd say certainly more than half is mental, probably well more than half, probably at least 3/4. Obviously, you don't get to a certain level, like even the college level, if you don't have something really special physically. But at the same time, there's so many people who have something really special physically who just can't make it. And part of that is just a numbers game and the available of professional spots available or the number of Olympic spots available or what have you. But I think a lot of it that makes the difference at the college level onward is definitely like, yeah, do you have the patience to stay in the gym? Do you have the mental fortitude to kind of wake up every day and do something when you don't necessarily want to do it? You might want to go back to sleep or whatever. So I think that does weed a lot of people out.
Who were the people you most enjoyed interviewing for this book, and who might be somebody you really wanted and for whatever reason you just couldn't get?
I enjoyed so many of the conversations I had. It was really great. Scurry was actually a great one. She was just so open and forthcoming, and, you know, she had a book to promote as well, but she was great, and I highly recommend her book, which is called My Greatest Save. Who else? Shamiqua Holdsclaw was really, good to catch up with her. But yeah, I mean, so many people were great. I'm just so grateful that I got a bit of Kevin Love's time in particular, and DeMar DeRozan. I don't think that chapter on kind of their stories mostly would have been the same without their input. So it was good to catch up with them. And, you know, they don't get as many questions now about mental health as I think they got a few years ago. So it was good to hear their current perspectives on it. And then as far as someone I didn't get and really wanted to, I talked to Michael Phelps for a Sports Illustrated story, but he wasn't available for the book, which was definitely a bummer, because, like I said earlier, I mean, he's just so influential in this space and has made such a huge difference and has so many intelligent things to say.
Did for the people who are... who are in our business listening, or for maybe young people who want to go into the business, do you have any advice on how to approach with the subject of mental health, just how to sort of start that interview and how you approached it?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing to try to talk to anybody about, whether it's an athlete or just like a friend or, you know, anyone in your own life. But when you're going into an interview about mental health, well, first, I think practically speaking, even though you might worry that it might make them say no, you have to tell them what the interview is about, because you just want to be straightforward. You don't want to trap anyone in the situation or trick them. You're not trying to get a gotcha moment. You're just trying to have an honest conversation. So I think being upfront about what you want to ask about, not with specific questions, obviously, but just with the general topics, I think is a helpful idea. And then from there, just kind of saying like, hey, this is what I want to go over. Do you have any questions for me before we get started? They might ask why I'm interested in the subject. And, you know, at that point, I'll go a little bit into my personal history with mental illness. A lot of times they don't have any questions, but if they do, it's a great chance to get them out. And then from there, just start off slowly, I would say. Don't ask, you know, about suicidal ideation right off the bat. And don't, especially if you think they're in a vulnerable state, don't necessarily dwell on questions like that for too long. It's almost better to jump around a little bit and mix in the difficult questions with some lighter stuff.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, so two more sort of areas for me. When you look at I don't think – I could be wrong, but I don't know if there's any major place at the moment that has like a full-time sports mental health reporter or writer. But we do see places that have written about this. It's usually like a profile of someone in some form where that topic will be broached. The Players Tribune obviously has been incredible in terms of people telling their stories when it comes to this. What are you seeing out there just in terms of like how the sports media is covering this? Have you seen increases on it? I think both of us, when we've previously talked, there is nobody covering it full time, but at least anecdotally, it does feel like there is more coverage of it. But you're the expert on this. How have you seen it?
Yeah, I think there is more coverage of it. It's not necessarily all like super prestige long form journalism coverage. I think that's okay. I'd like to see more of the latter, though. I think like you'll see like a profile here and then you'll kind of see the snake eat its own tail with like aggregations and aggregations of that same profile. Or it'll start with like an Instagram post from an athlete or a Players Tribune essay from an athlete. And the Players Tribune is kind of like quasi media. It's, you know, it's not...
It's like a hybrid between like, yeah, public relations and journalism sort of, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think there's been really valuable stuff published on that site. But you're right that I can't think of a full time sports mental health reporter either. And I would love to see us get there one day.
I hope so. I mean, I think before that, what's going to happen is just books like yours will be sort of at the forefront of this. Maybe somebody will start a Substack. But again, like that seemingly would be on the side because you have to still pay your bills. But I'm with you. And I think I've told you this in the past too. Like, I feel like there's an opportunity for a publication to have this specialist and I think the stories would get read. Like, I think ultimately it is a business at the end of the day, but I think this would be something that's both in the public interest as well as potentially, you can monetize it. The last thing I want to ask you about, is just quickly on Sports Illustrated. You know, both of us obviously are alums of that place at different, you know, we didn't work together, we're in different generations there. But now that you're outside of this, I don't know, I sort of just broadly ask you, like, what are your feelings about where Sports Illustrated is now? Are you optimistic at all about the future of the editorial at that place? I'd just be curious sort of where you see things.
Yeah, man, what a rough few months, what a rough few years. The entirety of my time there was during the Arena Group era, just for context for listeners. Yeah, I think I have a lot of feelings about it, certainly. it's sad to watch all the people that I still know they're doing great work being put in the position they're in. Because that's the thing that a lot of people on the outside don't necessarily realize is that there still are a ton of people that are doing great work on the magazine, on the website. And it's, you know, I don't always get the impression that those journalists are valued enough. And I am not sure whether to be optimistic or not. I'm optimistic that the people creating stories in that space will continue to create stories in journalism. Will that be at Sports Illustrated? You know, I'm not sure. The licensing dispute is complicated. I have no inside information, but I just hope it works out where we're not losing these talented people.
If this is too hard a question for you, you don't have to answer. I apologize. But can Sports Illustrated function as a editorial place and at least sort of a link to the Sports Illustrated that all of us grew up and know and love under the Arena Group? Or does it, would it have to be extricated from the Arena Group, be part of some new entity that may look at Sports Illustrated's, it may look at Sports Illustrated and treat Sports Illustrated in a different way?
I think whether it's the Arena Group or someone else, it has to be people who are willing to treat journalists the right way. And I haven't seen that recently in the Arena Group's actions since I left. You know, I'm hopeful that if they keep the license, they can turn things around. But yeah, it's tough to say, obviously.
Do you want to continue working as in like a copy chief, copy editor type role? Because obviously these are, in you know, anybody who's worked at any place understands how important those positions are. Or do you think with your new book out, you're going to try to sort of maybe continue to do books and this will be the avenue that you put, you know, your sort of words into the marketplace?
So from both a craft perspective and a business perspective, I kind of hope to continue with both lanes of work. Writing books, I found this process really rewarding. I do have another book idea in the works. So I hope to continue with that. But at the same time, editing just scratches a different itch in my brain. I love it. I love polishing other reporters' stories. And I think that's a really valuable and increasingly rare skill. So I do want to keep doing that. And I do want to keep writing books, and both revenue streams kind of leave something to be desired, but maybe
right.
Together I can cobble together a career. Yeah.
Yeah. We're sort of, in many ways, we're all multiple. We have multiple employers now, whether we are
right.
One of our employers, it's sort of the deal. How long did the book take you? Should have asked you that at the beginning, from conception to completion.
So it was conceived in the middle of 2020, and I submitted the first draft in, I think, March of 2023.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you and or your publisher and or if you have a publicist know this, but I hope you can get the book in the hands of some athletes.
Yeah.
Because one, I think they'd appreciate it, but two, they may publicize it a little bit, and that'd be cool because like they have an audience for it. But I really liked it. I mean, it's very, very clear. You put your heart and passion and research into it. So I'm really rooting for it to do well. The book comes out March 5th. It is Mind Game, an inside look at the mental health playbook of elite athletes. Julie Kliegman is the author. I should never presume anything, but can one get this on Amazon?
Yes.
Or wherever people get books?
Absolutely.
Okay. Any other place you want to promote where people can get books, or any, are you doing any kind of live reading in some city for this?
I am doing a reading on Tuesday night, that's March 5th, at Astoria Bookshop. I hope to schedule other events. If you're stumped on where to get the book, can't decide, my local indie Astoria Bookshop is a great choice. Love them, and they'll ship anywhere. But
is that Astoria, Queens?
Yeah, in Queens.
Oh, nice. Love that. All right. Well, if you happen to be in Astoria, Queens, make sure you pick up some food. Perhaps the greatest place in the world when it comes to different kind of cuisine. But
yeah.
Certainly a Greek specialty for sure.
For sure.
All right. So again, the book is Mind Game, an inside look at the mental health playbook of elite athletes. And if you are an athlete, you will certainly find it valuable. If you happen to be like a parent of someone who's young who wants to go in athletics, I'd actually absolutely highly recommend it. And again, even from that that one anecdote that I provided for you with Brianna Scurry, which is fascinating, like I have not stopped thinking about that particular one, because I think one can use that in their everyday life. Like if, you know, my kids do something that just sort of annoys me, I'm gonna give myself 45 seconds, I'm gonna get past it, and then we're gonna move on to something else. And that's incredibly smart advice by Colleen Hacker. All right, Julie, I wish you the best of this, and thank you so much for joining me today on the Sports Media Podcast. It's a really great topic, and you've been excellent on this every time I've read you in Sports Illustrated and elsewhere. So I really hope you continue to write on this. And thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been a good time.
All right. My thanks to Julie coming on and to talk about what is a really interesting book. And I imagine that will do well. Head to the archives if you like these kind of conversations. Our previous guest was Andrew Marchand of The Athletic. We went 90-plus minutes on a lot of sports media topics. Great feedback on that. So much appreciated. Jason Kirk on the power of college football and his new interesting novel. He's a co-host of the very popular college football podcast, The Shutdown Full Cast, and has a new novel out, Hell is a World Without You, in which he talks about growing up in the evangelical community. Really interesting. Peter King came on this podcast February 27th, the day after he announced his retirement. That was a great conversation. I highly recommend that one. Sue Bird on February 22nd, the Hall of Fame-to-be WNBA player, as well as now a budding media mogul. Check out everything she's doing. Kristen Lapis on telling Giannis' life story for Amazon. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for his hard work. Thank you to everybody at Odyssey for their support, and thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.